Hey, this is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 267 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. And I'm excited to bring in my interview with Chef Michael Lane from Oak Barbecue in Dallas, Texas. They opened up recently, the end of 2020, and I was really curious, and then I saw an interesting little write-up in Texas Monthly by Daniel Vaughn about the desserts in particular at Oak, and the fact that they have Wagyu and prime brisket, and this got the wheels running, so I got a chance to talk to Michael, and I'm really excited that he sat down because he's got a really interesting story. I won't go totally into it, so that he can tell you in his own words, but it involved him growing up in Texas, going to CIA in New York, working for a major caterer in New Jersey, at the same time as going to CIA, like going to school and then evenings working in this catering company, crazy hours. He's a dedicated guy, super dedicated, going back to Texas, working for hotels in different places, and then making his way to Dallas because his brother lived there. And after working at a very famous restaurant, he opened up a catering business that he grew to a seven-figure catering business, massive business. And he goes into the details of how he grew that business and how he grows business in general and the lists that he does, how he conceptualizes this, and then how Oat came about. And what his concept is for that. He also talks about a second oat that's coming out. It's going to be connected to a brewery. I'll go into that. It's really great. I'm really glad he sat down. The internet at times, a few times, were kind of spotty. So if you're watching this on the YouTube side, it lags a couple times, but the audio doesn't lag, just the video. So if you're headed to Dallas or in Dallas, check them out. Give them a chance to see what you think and let me know what you think below. Thank you, Chef, for taking the time. And the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast and YouTube show is brought to you by Centex Smokers. They're based out of Luling, Texas. The best way to get a hold of them is on Instagram. It's Centex_smokers, CENTEX_smokers. You can see all the pits he's building. Michael Johnson, he's been doing this since he was a wee kid. Now he's doing amazing stuff. Amazing finishes, amazing craftsmanship. 4 to 5 month lead time, which is just incredible. So give him a DM, get a quote. Again, that's Centex Smokers. And if you're enjoying these, please subscribe. That way you don't miss out. I'm doing a couple of these per week. Got a website at kevinsbbqjoints.com. Links to all my podcast, YouTube stuff, as well as lists and stories and just random musings within the barbecue world. But at the end, stay safe. Thanks so much for listening. Enjoy this. Good morning, Chef. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thanks for taking the time. Sorry, last week turned out a little weird, but this week is much better. It's nice to see you. How are you doing today? How are things? You guys open when? Was it November, December?
So we're about 17 weeks, I think, into the.
So you're in the restaurant right now. Is that the bar of the restaurant?
We have a really cool bar. We've got a whiskey bar here, and nice. We do, you know, craft ales and craft beer and all that. So we've got a fun bar.
Excellent. Well, we'll get into the restaurant, but I wanted to get into your background. Did you grow up in Texas?
Yeah, I grew up in Houston, and then I went off to high school in Beaumont, Texas.
Oh.
And then came back to Houston and worked in the restaurant world. In high school is kind of when I started working in restaurants. Then I went off to culinary school in Hyde Park, New York, and CIA. Yeah, I graduated from there in 92.
So what was that like going to New York from Texas? Was that a weird mind-opening experience because it's so different?
I'll tell you what, it was definitely a different experience. And I lived in the dorms at school. When I first got up there, I was immediately looking for a job to do the culinary thing and or wait tables, whatever I could do to make some money. And I didn't have a free ride or anything, so I had to pay for school all the way through.
Gosh.
So I was going to class in the morning from 6 to 11:30, and then I switched over and worked the whole rest of the day. Worked in hotels before that, and restaurants and all that stuff before I went to school. So I kind of had a good experience of, you know, what I was going to get myself into before I went to school. And then I waited tables a lot also in high school. So when I got up to school, I started waiting tables for probably the first 2 months. Then I got invited to go do a big catering event down in New Jersey. The next day, I found out who owned the company. And that was back in the day before, you know, computers really existed. You didn't have cell phones or anything, or at least I didn't. And I got on a map. Got my map out of my truck, and I was the only guy up there that probably had a truck at the time. And I drove down to New Jersey, 72 miles to New Jersey, to Franklin Lakes, New Jersey. And
oh my gosh.
Walked in the door of this grocery store, and I went into the customer service area and said, I need to talk to Tony Chanalis, the owner. And they said, is he expecting? I said, he absolutely is. He was not at the time, but I said that. A few minutes later, he came walking down. He said, what can I do for you? I said, Tony. I introduced myself. I said, Tony, I go to the culinary. I said, I want to work for you. I said,
wow.
I'll be here 6 days a week from 12:30, 1 o'clock in the afternoon until 11 o'clock at night. Went to the office and we literally chatted. He stopped his entire day. We chatted for like 2 or 3 hours.
Oh my gosh.
And it was really a welcoming environment for him at the time. And so I started the next day and he paid me really well. He paid me $1,000 a week. And then I also got tips on top of that for catering jobs and stuff.
Well, what made you have the confidence to know that? Like, what was in you? Had you done that before? Had you just gone randomly to a place to get a job?
Yeah, I've just always been the kind of person that just figures it out and makes it happen. I mean, I like to create a roadmap and then just start making the path to make it happen. I've always been that way.
That's
so
great.
It's kind of in our DNA, in our household. You know, my brother's that way, my sister's that way. We all are entrepreneurs. And we are all pretty aggressive in business and do all pretty decent with what we do. So
do you tend to keep your keep blinders on and focus? Like, are you good at focusing? Are you, because there's a lot of people that can't focus or that can't do, or that can't stay on a task. Obviously that's something in your mind. You knew that when you went down there, did you know in your heart that you were going to get that job?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I do have a little ADD sometimes, I think staying on task, but I'm a list creator. So I create a lot of lists and make sure that if I have a list, I can actually produce faster. Even with my prep in the kitchen, if I'm working in the kitchen and cooking, you know, I'll create a prep list and go through that exercise. If I don't do that, then it's easy to get distracted.
Do you put together a list like a lot of times at night before you go to bed? Is that something like a list for the next day? Do you do that kind of, I was just curious to help people, because a lot of people can't stay focused or don't get tasks done, and then that month goes by.
I'm just a big list guy, so
that's great advice.
Yeah, I've got my book right here.
No, that's smart.
My list of what I've got to do for the day, and then the next, you know, couple hours. So prioritize them. So
no, that's good. No, that's not for me too. If I make a list, I tend to get more things done. Because I think also too, that way you can prep out like a list for a week or a list for 2 weeks. Well, then okay, so working with him. Was it big volume?
It was big volume. Yeah. They just kind of give you ideas. They had 200 employees in this catering job, catering place, and it's a grocery store too. They had 60 trucks and vans. They actually taught me how to do the catering world. And so I loved it. I enjoyed it. And he wanted me to stay up there and work for him and do all that. And I chose to come back to Texas because that's really where my roots are in Texas.
Have you kept in contact with him, or is he still alive? Is he?
You know, I did for many years. It's been a long time. You know, we're 25 years away from that,
true.
No longer. So I did for a while and catch up with him and on a regular basis. And so I've always had an older person that's always been a good mentor of mine. You know, I always like to have someone to visit with and things like that.
Well, I wonder too, but I was just curious because of the pandemic, how a catering business, if it's that massive, how it would be doing now because everything changed.
You know, I occasionally will check in and see how they do up there. And I think they've grown even more. They're in a small town where they actually film The Housewives of New Jersey. So it's a high net worth area. Funny story is, you know, he tested me. Of course, when you go through the culinary world and especially in the fine dining world, you get tested a lot.
Yeah.
So I got thrown into the pastry shop with a French pastry chef for about 2 months. And he told me, he said, if you can survive with Patrick, the pastry chef, who's a French pastry chef, then you can survive anything to do with the business.
So was he super detailed and super?
Oh yeah. Detail. And then, you know, just they test you mentally. The French guys who are serious about the culinary world are very, you know, they test you anyway. So like I would say, I'm leaving chef in an hour and he'd bring out, you know, 20 cases of eggs to go crack or something like that. So it's like when you work in the hotel world, you know, you start off in prep and they bring in, you know, like 20 cases of potatoes and carrots to peel and all that.
It is a good way to get a sense of how hard this person is willing to work and what they're willing to give up for the job. So you graduated and did you come directly back to Texas?
Yeah, I graduated and came back to Texas. I started working at the Omni in Houston and Tim Keating was a chef there at the time. He wouldn't hire me at first, but I bothered him every day for 2 weeks.
That's so funny.
And so he said, you know what, I'm going to hire you because I need you to stop bothering me. So he hired me and I stayed working for him for 2 years. And then he also tested me too. He knew that I just had some pastry experience and he was short-staffed in the pastry department. So he threw me in the pastry chef with a pastry chef there. And I had to, you know, make 1,000 crepes every Sunday morning for brunch. And, you know, just daunting tedious work for, you know, high production, you know, in a hotel business.
We worked a little bit in the hotel business before, but that probably gave you another good sense of high volume, getting things done.
Oh yeah, totally different. So I did that for 2 years. I worked 6 days a week there, and my only day off, I went and worked for free at Cafe Annie in Houston for Robert Del Grande.
Oh, wow.
Which was the number one restaurant at the time in Houston. And so I did that for about a year. So I didn't work 7 days a week, and I didn't get paid at Cafe Annie at all. I did it just to get in the door and get the experience. Then he asked me to come work for him full time. Robert did. So I went over there and worked for a couple of years and worked all the on the line and everything in the kitchen, my tour of the kitchen there. And then I said, hey, I think I'm going to go to live in Dallas and be close to my brother. He lives in Dallas and he just graduated law school and everything. So Robert said, well, come to my office real quick. So we went up to the office and he picked up the phone. I didn't know what he was doing. He just picked up the phone and he said, hey, Dean, what are you doing? And it's Dean Ferry at the Mansion on Turtle Creek. And he said, hey, I got a chef who's coming to live in Dallas in 2 weeks and he's going to work for you. He didn't even give Dean the opportunity to say anything.
Oh, that's so great. Oh, wow. And especially the mansion. Wow. That's amazing. So,
Dean said to Robert, Robert said to Dean, hey, what's the hardest job in the kitchen and what do you have available? And it was a saucier. So I said, I'll take it. So I took the saucier position and was definitely the hardest job I ever had.
Can you explain to people what a saucier does?
Well, I mean, I didn't even know really what it was until I got up there. I mean, I knew that I was making sauces, but I didn't know how hard it was going to be. I mean, I made 25 to 30 sauces a day from scratch.
Wow.
For the whole restaurant. And then I had to do prep for lunch. And then I worked the front lunch line. And then I somehow got talked into working some overnight shifts a couple times a week for the overnight guy so he can have off. And then I started catering on my only day off. I worked 7 days or 6 days a week. On my seventh day, I had Monday off. I started catering and I started doing a lunch for a gentleman in town who owns the largest gear company in the world. So I started doing lunches for his board meetings. He paid me in one day more than I made in my entire week at the mansion. so
you're like,
I started thinking, I think I'm like, gosh, I'm doing this full time. So I mentioned it to him and he said, you know what, Michael, it's Mr. Martin, his name. And he said, I'm going to introduce you to all my friends. And you can start building a business up. So I started doing it full time. I went to Dean and said, I think I'm going to try this catering gig, see if it goes. And, you know, I'd like to give it a run for it. And so I did. And then in 30 months, I built it to a 7-figure business.
Holy smokes. So what were you, what type of catering were you doing? All types? Like, was it?
All types. I mean, in the beginning, I did everything I could get my hands on. I didn't turn anything down. And then it evolved more into a corporate setting because the corporate business was very steady. It's every day to where we were doing 2,000 to 3,000 people a day, anywhere from 50 to 100 events a day. We were very busy. We did a couple hundred weddings.
That is insane. That's insane.
We were doing a couple hundred funerals a year. We were just cranking out. We were running in the kitchen 24 hours a day.
Wow. Was this in Dallas proper or was this outside of Dallas?
It was in Dallas proper. Yeah. I actually went and found a kitchen and worked a really good deal with the kitchen. I stayed there for 18 years, ran it for 18 years straight.
18 years.
And I sold it to a restaurant group and got out of it. And they ran it into the ground in two years.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Well, like, I'm not sorry for you.
I was out, so I was okay.
And you're already, it's better that they didn't, sort of buy you out, and then you had to ride the roller coaster downhill. Oh, that's, I think also, too, the reason why it probably didn't do as well is because of you. Like, you have a certain one focus for something, and like when I got steady focus, it takes a certain type of person. You're willing, it's 18 years is a long time too.
And I was very good at networking the business and selling the business, and I would talk to CEOs and CFOs of the companies. That's who I dealt with directly, and I was very good at negotiating the deals and putting the structure together. I had a full-time office staff of 5 people that were just managing and orchestrating all the events and all the rentals. We had 25 different people of staff we brought in every day for temp staff. Plus, we had 25 or 30 full-time staff. So I learned it from Tony up in New Jersey. I mean, that
sounds like, I was going to say, it sounds like an interesting, a callback.
And I tried to get it as big as his company. In Dallas, I kept hitting that ceiling. I couldn't get it larger than what it was. I just kept hitting the ceiling with it. And then every restaurant started catering. Then I had to re-evolve the business and reformat it. Then I figured out ways how to outbid my competitors. I actually ended up owning all the rentals. So I went and bought all the rentals. So that's smart. Was a one-stop shop. I would come in and do a wedding for you, and I would give you only charge you $5 for rentals when everyone else had to go pay $20 for it or whatever number.
Yeah, no, I was married in a past life, and I went through that whole process. It's expensive. Like, that's what a racket that is. That's crazy.
Oh yeah, I kept renting stuff, and then, you know, I kept paying them enormous amounts for stuff. I'm like, yeah, I gotta own this stuff. There's no reason for me to rent this stuff.
And it's like a one-time use for people. Like, it's not something that they're buying. It's pretty. Yeah. It's a great business. If but nowadays, obviously, it might be different. Though at that time, when you sold to the restaurant group, did you have in mind, I'm going to open a restaurant someday, or were you going to maybe even completely use
it? I never wanted to open a restaurant until about 3 years ago.
Okay.
I got sucked into the corporate world by one of my neighbors. I didn't work for a couple of years. I did some private chef work for some famous people. My neighbor was the VP of a big restaurant company, equipment. And he said, look, you know everybody in Dallas. Why don't you come do some selling for us and business development? So I started doing that. And that's what I've done for, you know, last several years. And been slowly pushing out of that. But up to about 3 years ago, I didn't want to be in the restaurant business. I didn't really have the inch to do it. A lot of my colleagues did, and a lot of people I know in town were good at it. You know, there's a lot of people in Dallas that are they're excellent at it. I wanted to be in something that would give me something like a legacy that I could leave to my kids. And so that's why I started barbecue.
And had you, obviously, if you grew up in Texas, you had a love for barbecue, right?
I mean, yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, being a Texas boy and the roots of Texas, I kind of have this mission now where I want to do restaurants the food I like. And so, you know, we'll probably do some, since I'm already in the game now, we'll probably do some other concepts that would involve cuisines that I like to eat. Barbecue for sure is in the saddle, obviously, because we already have one restaurant up and running. We're going to do another one. We're working on the second one right now, the second location. Starbucks one day, and just working on my computer like normal. And I was sitting next to this gentleman that I sat next to probably most days, because my office was at Starbucks. And he and I just started chatting up, became friends, and he's my current business partner in the restaurant now.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Yeah, he's in the real estate business and a developer. I just said, look, there's some skills that I don't have to do it, and I think I'm going to do this restaurant concept. And so we just kept chatting up for like 6 months, and I just mentioned to him, I said, why don't you, his name's Clint. I said, why don't you do what? I said, you have some expertise that I don't, and I learned a long time ago to hire or partner up with people that you do that have those expertise. So we started building the concept. We went on tour. We went for 9 months to all the barbecue restaurants in Texas, or a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And then we started taking notes, me making my list, my analytics side of me.
Yeah.
We started making spreadsheets and lists of things that restaurants were doing right and what they were doing wrong. And that's how we created this concept.
And how long did it take you to find that actual location?
Yeah, this is our third location that we tried on. We tried for two others, and just the deals couldn't come together. The city didn't want us there. So we came across this location, had a great patio. This is in Dallas, the most dense shopping center as far as demographics.
Okay.
And per capita is the highest net worth. So we chose that this would be a good location. There was no, and I am a firm believer of making sure you create those circles around guys that are really good at what they do and not impede on their business. You know, I wouldn't want them to do that to me, and I don't want to do it to them. So if I was to go choose another location, there's no one else around me, I would impede on their business.
That makes sense. It's good. It's good for you, and it's good for them. And it's also, you're helping each other, and
the barbecue guys, we're all in this together. You know, I would never go park a business, you know, a mile away or down the street from someone else, because look, he's worked hard in his business, and I wouldn't want that done to me. So I'm a firm believer, treat others how you want to be treated.
That's great. That's great advice. And it's nice to hear that, because a lot of times people don't care, or they're not even thinking of that when they're picking a location. And with that location, did you have plans to open earlier last year, or was it always the end of the year?
Yeah, you know, we started the construction before COVID even existed. So we had about a year construction line timeline to come in. We gutted the building down to, you know, we even ground all the concrete floors down. We took 1 ton of concrete dust off the floor. The location we're in actually has some history to the restaurant industry. We're in the original, the very first TGI Fridays location. They started almost 50 years ago.
Are you serious? I didn't know that. I didn't know it started in Dallas.
So they put this location in, and then it became a brewery for about 15 or 12 years. And then a couple of the little restaurant concepts, and then went dormant for a while. And it was sitting empty for almost 4 years.
What was the anticipation like before you opened this restaurant? What did that feel like, even like the day or week before?
When you decide it's time to go, it's a big race, you know? So we did the construction. When COVID hit, we started walking the construction and down to like one sub. We wanted to just kind of, you know, just figure out what was going to happen, how long this whole pandemic thing is going to last, and, you know, what does it look like? And we structured our lease where we didn't pay until we opened up. We had a few months of, you know, not paying. Also. But and that's just because, you know, I brought Clint on. That's his expertise in negotiation. He's very good at it. You know, he understands how the language works and how to make sure all those things happen. But we got to a certain point in early spring, and where we had we think we had an open date, and then we started going. Or now it's early spring, you know, late the summertime. So summertime. We kind of turned everything on and started really doing the construction.
Let's talk about your menu and and from what I see, and my friend Kelly came by with her niece last week.
I had a good conversation with her the other day, so I'm glad I got to meet her.
Yeah, so and she loved it, and she loved the food was great, also the desserts, and we'll get into that. And she's a dessert person because she has a blog, The Meaning of Pie. Is it walk up, and then also if the bar, can you order at the bar to eat at the bar? Like, it's weird because it's COVID, but the concept and plan.
Yeah, so we're traditional, you know, we're Central Texas barbecue. Okay, we're cooking Central Texas barbecue, and we have a line concept. So you walk up to the carver table, you're carving all the meats. When I designed the concept, I wanted all the stations along the line to be an action station of interaction with the customer.
Perfect.
So it doesn't matter if you're carving, or if you're getting a salad station or desserts or a special station, whatever is happening, customers getting personal interaction with the person on the other side of the line.
Perfect.
Even down to the pastry side of it. You know, we're torching the product right in front of them or whatever. We're making French fries. I mean, when you order your meats, we call out the order for the French fries. So by the time you get down to the end of the line, they're coming out of the fryer, they're done.
That's cool. I don't think I've even had that ever.
We're a from scratch kitchen. So everything's done from scratch in this kitchen every day. So we're already here cooking. We're already here 24 hours a day. So I might as well utilize our time and make it work right.
From what the article that I read from Daniel, there's two, you have Wagyu and Prime. Is that what you have?
So I wanted to do something a little different on the meat side of the business. Because we are in the meat business. That's kind of how I look at it. I wanted to have prime as our lowest quality of product. And then I want to have Wagyu and then other specialty products. Yeah. So I think we're probably one of the only few barbecue houses that I know of that I've been to that is offering both.
I was trying to think before we talked. I can't think of one.
I don't think there are anyone. I have never been to one yet. So part of what spawned the idea. And then we also will start having guest ranches come in every quarter. So
that's a neat idea.
I'll bring a guest ranch in and on a Friday night. And, you know, we might find a local rancher that can only, process one animal or two animals. And I can help him provide income for his family, and I can utilize, a quarter of his product. It gives him a living and it helps me out. And also what it does is it creates a following for the customers. They might decide they want, we bring a grass-fed ranch in, and which is hard to smoke, by the way, grass-fed. It doesn't have enough marbleization. It gives another following to the customer base for us.
You were cooking, I think I had read that you were cooking a little barbecue on the catering side, like you were doing barbecue, but was there a learning curve for this? And because are you cooking on oilers?
Well, I had an offset smoker. We had a 500-gallon offset smoker. So we were doing barbecues. The biggest barbecue I ever did on my care business was 3,000 people. We were doing them all the time on a weekly basis, but it was not that big all the time. And it was, 50 here, 100, 200.
It wasn't the focus.
It wasn't the focus. Yeah. I mean, we were running 20 or 30 menus a day. So it wasn't the focus.
Yeah.
But I knew how to do it. And I didn't really have it honed in. When I decided to get into the barbecue business, then I started really honing in on, the craft and using my culinary skills.
Are you cooking on, is it an oiler? Is that what you're using?
Yeah, we're doing oilers. So we're doing J&Rs. Clint and I are numbers guys too. So I wanted to do the offsets at first, but then once we started looking at the numbers on it, cost, labor costs, it didn't make sense. And so the Oilers, I get the exact same product out of them. Like I said, I've done it before, so I know what kind of product I can get out of it.
And also, too, because you traveled around for 9 months and you lived in Texas, you knew what you were looking for. Yeah.
The Oilers give us a very consistent product. It allows me to be also creative in different ways in the business. It's hard to, when you have the offsets, you're moving product around a lot, costing twice as much on wood, twice as much on labor.
Well, also too, you'd have to figure out to build a smokehouse or figure out a place to put that. There's a lot of, and especially where you are, that wouldn't make sense. Yeah.
We'll have some offset trailers and we'll use those when we go to catering. I'm building trailers right now. So we'll have some offset trailers. We've got big, huge serving trailers we're building. We've got 2 30-foot trailers we're building, plus offset smokers. We're going to get into the festival side of the business, on the catering side of it. I mean, I'm going to be able to pull into an event and we're going to have, you know, a whole compound of bars and barbecue and,
that's cool,
you know, eating areas. And so that's the catering and, you know,
yeah, your mind is already, I could see the wheels are already running.
Yeah. I mean, I've got a big budget that I've worked in that for all that to happen. So they're being designed right now and they're going to be start going to commission to get built. And they'll be probably rolling on the street in the summer.
Wow, that's crazy. So what proteins do you offer?
All right, so we've got, obviously, our, you know, briskets, we're doing pork ribs, we're doing pork butts, I'm doing a really cool special this week. I'm going to turn on, we're going to do a chicken fried steak starting every Tuesday.
Nice.
But I'm going to use filet, and we're going to pound the filet out.
Oh, interesting.
And then I'm going to use our jalapeno cheese sausage, which comes from our Wagyu trimmings, and we'll use that in the gravy. And then I'll top it with some glaze, barbecue glaze, smoked burnt ends.
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, I made it last week. I've been thinking about it for a couple of weeks, and I made it last week and handed it out all day to customers just to kind of get feedback. And the feedback I got that day that it was so good, I said, all right, we got to put this on the menu. So we're gonna put it on the menu. It starts tomorrow.
So Tuesdays will be chicken fried steak night?
Every Tuesday will be chicken fried steak day. Yeah, and then I got another, we're going to start doing salmon, smoked salmon planks on Fridays. And then we'll also do a coffee crusted smoked tenderloin, which will be on Fridays also.
Nice. So that's good. That's good that you have that ability and that option to do that. That's,
yeah.
And the area desires. That's something that people will like to. And people love specials.
I'm pretty modest, but I made the filet a few weeks ago, and it was off the chain amazing. I mean, it's probably the best filet I've had in a long time.
Wow, that's
good. I'm very modest. I don't toot my own horn or anything, but it was really good.
Well, if it was really good too, it's nice. Yeah. And yet, especially you wouldn't have said that. Well, what sides do you offer?
You know, I'll probably do like a mashed potato or something simple, and on the filet I'll make like a mushroom demi glace or something on the side or put it over the top, you know, whatever people want.
In general, what sides do you guys offer?
Oh, the restaurant line. Oh yeah, well, we've got, you know, your barbecue beans, we put brisket in them, we've got collard greens with pork and turkey, we make them with ham hocks also.
Oh, nice.
And then we've got, you know, a three cheese mac, we've got a roasted Brussels sprouts. I put dried cherries and smoked almonds in it. I use the smokers as a vehicle to create a component of smoke in the dish. So it's not like everything's smoked. We don't throw the mac and cheese in the smoker. We might smoke one item that goes in it. We might smoke one item that goes into the Brussels sprouts. Our potato salad, we only smoke the corn that goes in it. So it's just, again, the vehicle of the ingredients. It might be one item that goes.
You have a pastry chef, right?
Yeah, we have a pastry team here. So we brought a pastry chef on board. Her name is Ceci, and the original concept, I reached out to her about 9 months before we started, and we started building the concept. And that was part of my research of going to all the barbecue restaurants. No one focuses on the pastries. Everyone focuses on the meat, and the sides and the pastry are all secondary. And so I wanted to make sure when you're going down the service line, everything is, you know, superior product.
Yeah.
So pastries are a part of that. And so I wanted to have 8 to 10 pastries every day from scratch that will go on the pastry line.
That's crazy. So are there standard ones, or do you guys kind of shuffle them around? Or?
Yeah, we do our standard ones are, we do a banoffee, which is an English banana pudding. It's made with toffee.
Toffee as well.
We do obviously bread pudding. We use brioche bread for that. We do a key lime pie. We have a chocolate flourless cake, have a s'mores pie, which tastes just like a s'more. We burn it right in front of the customer on top on the marshmallow. We make marshmallow from scratch, and we, you know, pipe it on top and burn it.
So good.
Make homemade ice cream. We make homemade apple pie. I mean, like I said, everything's from scratch here.
Because I saw that you guys have toast. So you guys have, you can order ahead online, and you're open 11 till 9 p.m. 11 a.m.
We're open from 9 to 11. I'm sorry. Yeah. 11 to 9.
11 to 9. Yeah.
Yeah. 11 to 9.
11 to 9. Okay. Sorry. Okay. Perfect.
And it all blends together when you're here all night.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're open all the time, like 24 hours a day. Yeah. In your mind, you are. And you could order ahead of time on with the POS system, the toast.
You can. Yeah. You can order ahead of time. Yeah. And we've gotten to the point where we'll run out of food most days.
Okay.
We cook until we're out. The restaurant stays open because people do want to come in and have cocktails. We do stay open until 9, no matter what. On the weekends, we started staying open a little later because it's the crowd's demanding it. You know, we got a crowd. We had a full house this weekend. Wow. We've had the best weekend we've had yet. So,
are you at 50% capacity or 25? Is it?
We just opened up last week to 75.
75. No. Okay. Well, in Los Angeles, we're at 0.
I know. Over in California, you don't know what that feels like, but it's.
Yeah, I haven't stepped in.
Here in Texas, we're at 75.
It's so weird. It's been like, think about almost a year, like over a year that I've stepped in a restaurant. It's bizarre. Yeah. Wow.
I think Governor Abbott's trying to get rid of the mask too. So hopefully we don't have masks and whatever needs to be safe and whatever people require. Yeah. We want to make sure people feel safe when coming here. But we follow all the guidelines, whatever needs to happen. So we have a really big patio. So we're 100% in the patio. We're 75% inside.
So you could order ahead online. You could also order in line. You could order at the bar. There's no table service. It is a lineup.
There's no table service. No. No. We thought originally we're going to do that just at the bar, but it just didn't work out that way. I mean, it's just too complicated to try and push orders from the bar back to the line. The concept didn't work well. So we had to stop it after a couple of days.
You can get gift cards online. Do you guys have merch already?
Do gift cards online. Yeah. We'll start doing brunch. I'll have a brunch menu I'm rolling out. So in April, we'll start rolling out brunch. That'll be Friday, Saturday.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday brunch. Really,
on Fridays, it'll be more of a breakfast, but trying to get the men's business groups come in and stuff like that on Fridays.
Do you already have that with the wheels running as to what like those breakfasts, what those brunches will be like?
Yeah, I do actually. One of the items, for example, might be we make our own homemade biscuits here. And so we'll do a biscuit with brisket, and then we'll do a poached egg or an over easy egg, and then you can put hollandaise on it or something like that. We'll obviously make some pancakes or waffles, and we'll do hash bowls. We're going to have, again, it'll be kind of an action station on the line. So you'll be able to see what's happening on the line.
Cool. That'll be great.
With your breakfast all the way through. So it'll be very cool. You'll be able to build your own, you know, breakfast bowl and things like that. I've got it all written down, but I'll start actually cooking it and playing around with it here soon.
So you probably have a list, right?
Yeah, I've got a list. Somewhere. Yeah. At my household, my family knows not to touch any papers on my desk because I've got papers scattered everywhere. In my mind, it's all organized.
Yeah, sure.
If you ask them, it's messy. Yeah. But I got it all organized in my head.
When we first started talking, you said, is that behind you? Is that a whiskey bar?
Yeah, so we've got a good variety of whiskeys on the bar and craft cocktails. And
Texas wines?
Good bar team to help put all that together. And then with the next restaurant, we're actually going to build a brewery. So we'll have a brewery. We'll make our own beer for both restaurants. And we'll take all the hops and take them down to the ranch and feed them back to our cattle, our barn. Wagyu cattle.
Really? Do you own cattle?
That'll happen every week. Well, I mean, it's not mine, but the cattle that we buy, yeah. The cattle we buy from Rosewood, which is Rosewood Wagyu. Yeah. So we'll take the hops every week down there, and that's part of the process of Wagyu is on the hop side of it. So
yeah.
We'll be, you know, creating our own hops and the ecosystem, so we'll be able to contribute back to what we're doing.
Will that location be in Dallas?
Exactly. Say it again.
Well, that location, that second location, is that going to be in Dallas?
It's actually going to be in Addison. Okay. So we're going to Addison on Beltline, which is Beltline and the Tollway.
Okay.
And so I've already signed the lease, and we're going through the city right now. We'll be in the city probably for this, 6 months, or not 6 months, maybe like 6 to 8 weeks, 9 weeks. And we'll open that up in February or March of 22.
Okay. And it will be at Oaks as well?
It'll be Oaks and Brewery.
Oaked and Brewery. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, so we'll do live music. We do live music every weekend. So every Friday and Saturday, we do live music at this current store, and we'll do live music over there too.
That's so great. That's exciting. Is it fun?
Oh yeah. I'm excited about the brewery side of it just because of the science part of the of making the beer, and it kind of lets me be creative in that kind of way. I've always kind of wanted to do that. And so I've got some good friends in Dallas who own breweries, and so they're going to help me with my learning curve. I'm going to actually start again back to my original days of working my day off. I'll start on my days off here, go working at their brewery, learning the business and learning that side of it, and that's making the beer. Awesome. So that way, when we get it open, I actually know what I'm talking about.
That's so great. Well, thank you for taking the time. This is so interesting. And I had been meaning to contact you for about a month or so, because I wanted to, as I saw things happening, and then I saw the article from Daniel Vaughn, I thought, well, you know, this sounds really interesting. Yeah. And now I didn't even know about the second restaurant, and I'm sure there'll be even more. Well, that's, congratulations on the opening. Congratulations on, I've heard only good things, and I'm excited to visit you when California opens up its walls and lets us out of here.
Well, when you get into Texas, come by and see us. We'd love to have you here.
Oh, without a doubt.
And host you for a meal.
Excellent. Well, I look
Thanks
forward
for to having me on. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.